My name is Timothy Jones, and I'm professor here in the School of Leadership and Church Ministry, and I've written several books, and I won't go through all of those because I don't need to recount all of that. You can look in the bookstore and find those. But one of the books I've done is entitled Finding God in a Galaxy Far, Far Away, and it is a book about Star Wars and the kind of the theology and the spiritual aspects of Star Wars. And so that's one of the books. It may not be the most successful one I've ever done, but it was certainly the one that I had the most fun writing because I could spend my research time actually sitting there watching Star Wars. I mean, and I could convince my wife of this. Yes, I'm really researching, honey, right now. I've been researching for 12 hours straight through both trilogies. And so the name of the book is Finding God in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. And I will admit I've been just kind of fascinated for a long time with science fiction and things related to science fiction. And Star Wars, as we'll talk about in a little bit, is not pure science fiction, but we're going to look at the gospel and science fiction is what we're going to look at today. Now, I put a Dr. Pepper up here, and you're thinking probably, why on earth did you put a Dr. Pepper up on the screen? Well, for me, much of my fascination, it started with Dr. Pepper. Let me tell you why and how that works on that. I ended up, when I was 5 years old, I had begged my mom and dad to go see this new movie, Star Wars, that was coming out. I was 5 years old at that time. And so as a five-year-old, I'm sitting there and I didn't know what I was going to see. I was just thinking a space adventure. That's all I'm thinking about is just some sort of a space adventure, basically a Western set out in outer space. That's kind of what basically it was for me. And think of the context at this time. These are kind of some icons of this time period right here. Right here, there was the car that we went to the drive-in in right there, except ours was a light blue one, a Ford Pinto, 1970-something Ford Pinto with the fake wood sides on it. Okay, so this is the car we're in at the station wagon. We go to the drive-in theater, and I'm sitting there with my Dr. Pepper in the drive-in theater. And I was like, I didn't know what I was going to really see, didn't realize what I was going to hear, didn't know what I was should expect, anything like that. And so I'm sitting there with that, and the opening of the movie begins. The opening of the movie. Now, I'm sure you've seen it, but let's go ahead and take a look at it, and we're going to use this as a springboard for some other discussions that we're going to look at. Now that right there, I look at it now, and right now I'm thinking about all the different potential technical things and everything like that, because I've seen it so many times. But when I was a little kid at that time, when I saw this as that child right there, I'm sitting at a drive-in theater, it's at night in the drive-in theater, and you're sitting there looking up at the screen, and it just, that starship just rolls right over your head at that point right there. And when you get to that point, when I got to that point, I'm sitting there with my Dr. Pepper, and I just drop it right in the floor, the brand new Pinto, right there. I just saw that, and it was so awe-inspiring to me when I saw that. Now, when you start thinking about that, there's something about science fiction that often can incite just a sense of awe and wonder at what you're seeing. There's a sense of awe and wonder that is there in what you see or what you read or in what you experience. There's a sense of awe and a sense of wonder. Now, I want to talk a lot about that sense of awe and wonder, but I want us to understand just a couple of things as you kind of saw that opening right there. Science fiction offers us awe and wonder. Something else that it in many ways offers us, it offers us what we might call, and we're going to use a big word here, and that word is meta-narrative. It offers us a meta-narrative. What you saw right there is that it rolls through this story and it puts you in the midst of a story that is bigger than yourself. And that's what I want you to kind of get out of that. It puts you in the midst of a story. I mean, when I was a child, when I was 5 years old, I didn't catch half those words. Some of them, I didn't know what they meant. Princess Leia, the custodian of the secret plans. As far as I knew at that time, the custodian was the person who ratted on me when I dropped a snake down the back of a girl's dress. It was dead, so it was okay. So that's what I didn't even understand at all. But I understood when those words rolled by, I absolutely understood that I was being placed in the midst of a story that was greater than myself. And we're hungry for that as people. Now, what is science fiction? Let's just briefly go through, because there's really some different technicalities about the definitions of science fiction, and I don't want to get caught up in all of those. But true science fiction is a potential future in your from the present spheres of existence. In other words, it's something about our potential future. This world, or worlds connected to this one, its own potential future. Now, technically, in that way, when Star Wars sets itself up by saying a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it is not science fiction at that point. It's a space opera at that point, and which points to some sort of a separate sphere of existence, usually which has an extremely advanced technology. There's another type or another form that we might sometimes call science fiction, which is a multi-layered present. In other words, what it looks at is unexplored dimensions of the present reality. This is recently, there have been several at least popular examples of this. This is, for example, the X-Files. It says the truth is what? Out there. The truth is out there. And so is the program most of the time, is really out there. But it's that type of a science fiction type thing that they're doing right there. And what it does in the midst of that is it posits in our present reality some layer that we are missing of our present reality. Another example of that, how many of you read Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials trilogy? So anybody read that trilogy right there? It's a really, the Golden Compass is a movie that was made from this, and basically it posits different layers of our present reality. So science fiction, there's different types of that. I don't want to get caught up in all the different types, but just so you're aware, when I use science fiction, it may include any one of these in what we're going to be talking about today, what we're going to be looking at. And you think of all sorts of examples in each one of these. For example, under the top one would be Star Trek, would be more that type in that science fiction, a potential future for our present sphere of existence. You might think of Blade Runner, the classic movie Blade Runner, which is a really good example probably from the novelist Philip Dick, his book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, that from that book there. And so we've got all these different ones that you can put into these different categories in this. Now, what I want to point out, though, and what I really want to consider in this is simply the fact that in all of these, there is an awareness that there is something other than the world we are presently experiencing. There is something other than, something bigger than, something greater than the world as we experience it. The world as we experience it is not necessarily the world as it finally will be or as it ought to be or even as it truly is. There's something we're missing in the world that we live in. There's something that we're missing out on. There's something in the world. In every one of these, there's some other, a potential other in this. That may be, that you may find in Star Wars, a restless seeking for balance in the Force. You may find in something else, a desire for peace between man and machine. You may find a desire to find the truth that is out there. But in all of those, what you find is a desire for something other. Now, humanity has that desire for something other. It is driven in the depths of your soul. You have a desire for something other. Paul knew that. Paul, he stood in the midst of the Areopagus, and he said to them in the Areopagus, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you're very religious. For as I passed along and I observed the objects of your worship, I found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God, to that other that we don't know. What therefore you worship as unknown, this, he said to them, I proclaim to you." We'll return to this text later on, but there's a longing for something that is out there that is other. Paul also says in another place in the book of Romans, he speaks of how there is within creation itself a groaning for glory. A groaning for glory. He says the creation itself waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth. Now, you know what? The whole creation groans for something greater and more, the whole world, than what it's experiencing right now. It's in the level of our soul. It's in the level of creation. There is a groaning for this. C.S. Lewis, He used a term, and he did not originate it, but he used a term called Sehnsucht in German, Sehnsucht in German, which is a desperate longing for something, a deep inward longing for something, a longing for something beyond, something greater. What this is a recognition of is that there is a storyline that God has written on our souls, a sense that life as it is not life as God intended it to be, and inscribed in our very souls is the hope for redemption. Here's how C.S. Lewis, one of some ways he described that. He says, apparently then our lifelong nostalgia, our longing to be reunited with something in the universe from which we now feel cut off, to be on the inside of some door which we have always seen from the outside, is the truest index of our real situation. Another in his books, he says, it was like a bird in a cage when the other birds of its kind are flying home to find the place from which all the beauty came, my country, the place where I ought to have been born. We have a longing for home. He also says in another place, we're like a drunk man who knows he has a house but can't find his way home. That sense of longing is throughout science fiction. That sense that there is something greater, something other than what we are experiencing in the world, this longing that C.S. Lewis calls the Sehnsucht. Now, here's something that's interesting about science fiction. Even as science in our world has attempted to strip away the supernatural, science fiction has become increasingly supernatural. You think about that. In our world, we live in a world in which science has tried to strip away the supernatural. And we could go into all sorts of the reasons for that, going all the way back to Immanuel Kant in 1789 and his Critique de Raison et Vernunft, to Critique of Pure Reason. We could go all the way back and through that. I don't want to go through all of that. But what has happened in the 1800s especially is that that which is really true became increasingly identified with that which is scientifically verifiable. And that which is really true must be something that science can verify. And so religion, of course, doesn't end up faring very well in this category. So think about this. Science fiction, though, in all the science fiction, let's name some. Just kind of thought, what are some science fiction things that have some supernatural thing in them? What are some?
Star Trek.
Star Trek? What is in Star Trek that's that way? There is. It's very interesting in Star Trek. Because you start out with the first version of Star Trek being very anti-supernatural in some sense. That which is ultimate is the Vulcan, who is absolutely rational, reasonable. In the second rendition of Star Trek, it's very interesting that you have that really emotions are considered to be really a good thing. Data is always trying to get emotions at different times. But more interestingly, you end up with these supernatural things like Q. Do you remember that from Star Trek, The Next Generation, they got Q? That's this very supernatural aspect that they've added in this. So we see in Star Trek how it becomes increasingly supernatural, even as science in our world tries to strip away the supernatural. What else? What's another one? Exactly. You got that dynamic right there. It starts out early on, the first trilogy, in some sense. You have the first trilogy in which the Force is really very much a mystery. But by the time you get to the second trilogy, they explain away the Force in terms of a midichlorian count right there. I mean, it's basically this biological phenomenon, and they explain it away. Do you see the dynamic there of a struggle even within different series? You see a struggle between the scientific and the fact that they want to explain things scientifically, but they cannot explain things scientifically completely and it be a satisfying story when they do that. What are some other examples of the supernatural? Yeah. Tell me about that. I'm not familiar with those. Tell me about that. So you get all these different, that all have different capacities supernaturally, okay? All right, what are some others? Good, yeah. Okay, the TV show Lost, there's a lot of just, that you cannot seem to escape some sense of a supernatural. And even though may want to, you cannot seem to escape that. All of these different things, and I just want us to wrestle with that and realize that even as science tries to rule out the supernatural, science fiction is honest enough to recognize that we cannot rule that out completely in our lives. We do not work that way. God did not create us to work or to function in that way. I want to look at three things Three what I'm going to call groanings for the gospel in science fiction. Three groanings for the gospel in science fiction. And what I mean by that is Paul talks about how all of creation groans for redemption. And what I believe we find in many of the storylines in science fiction is we find groanings of that desire to be redeemed. Groanings for the gospel. Here's the first groaning for the gospel that you find in science fiction is wonder or awe. Wonder or awe. Now here's what I mean by that. Well, as I said, when that ship went over my head, I was just in awe of that. That was something that was awe-inspiring to me. The best science fiction, somehow, at the level of the soul, it lifts you up into some sense of a wonder or awe or beauty, and you recognize a greater awe, wonder, beauty. Now, what I mean by awe and wonder and beauty is that sense that there's just something bigger than what I understand or know at this time. Something bigger than me. Wonder and awe are the foundation, and they are the fountain of what becomes worship in our lives. In some sense, wonder or awe is the food, the raw stuff of our worship. But because it is the raw stuff of worship, it can easily be turned toward objects that do not deserve worship. And here's what God intends in us. When we have that sense of awe and wonder, that we learn to turn that toward Him. We learn to, in some sense, it exercises our soul. It exercises our soul to be aware of awe and wonder so that we become more able to turn that awe and that wonder towards the glory of God. That's what God intends it to do. Wonder and awe, though, if they never gain a specific address, can become idolatry. Wonder or awe, but without a specific address. In other words, in terms of Star Wars, if I have that sense of awe and wonder at this great, grand storyline, but I never have anywhere else to put it and to aim it, if I have nothing greater to aim it at, what happens in my life? It either leads to deeper, if I really take it seriously about the force, greater self-centeredness, it leads to a lot of frustration because I go around to people I don't like going, like that, and it never works when I do that. Where does it lead? It does not lead anywhere except for more into me. And that's the glory and the danger of this inciting of awe that we have in certain movies, certain films, all of that is in and of itself, it leads only to self. But if we let it, we can say, wow, this is a picture, this is an echo of the glory and the wonder of God. Let's go in our minds something that you may want to forget if you're a Star Wars fan. You may want to very much forget. That is episode 1. Okay? You may want to forget that episode 1 ever existed at that point. But we'll use this as an example. I think one of the reasons people hated that film was not because of it being a terrible film. There were some aspects that may have been terrible, but wasn't so much of that. But they were trying to find in that film the same awe, the same wonder that they found when they watched the first one they saw back in the 1970s. And it wasn't there. But it wasn't there not because of the film. It wasn't there because of them. It wasn't there because they had grown beyond that, but they were still trying to get that wonder and awe they had back then. In other words, wonder and awe had become their goal rather than their goal being something greater. They were still basking in what they had felt at one time, and that film failed to deliver that, and so it became frustrating. Why? We don't like this. Why? Because it fails to deliver what they were wanting. Let's look at another thing. Faith. Throughout science fiction, there is somehow a faith, a trust, that the world can be better in that. It may be caught up in a myth of progress in some sense. It may be saying that there is some sort of a balance in the force that can be achieved. It may be that there really can be peace between alien species. Whatever it is, there is a sense of faith in the future. But the problem is that often it is not a biblical faith. I want to spend some real time on this one right here because we live in a world that doesn't have a good definition of faith in many cases. I want to look at this a little bit in depth because I want us to understand something. Biblical faith includes two aspects. And number one of them is propositional assent. Propositional assent. That is that certain specific things are really true. Now, we live in a world that doesn't want to believe that. Doesn't want to say that to really know God, you have to believe certain specific things about God. That is to say, you have to believe that He has revealed Himself in Jesus Christ and that Jesus Christ is exclusively the one in whom He has fully revealed Himself. The world doesn't want to accept that. But that is propositional assent, and that is an essential part of faith. There's another part, though. You can't just believe the facts. It's also personal allegiance. That is that I allow whatever I'm believing in to define my life. It defines my life. Biblical faith must be propositional assent and personal allegiance both. If it ceases to be one or the other, it is not authentic faith. Now, with that in mind, I want us to watch a clip of a couple of things about faith. And let's take a look at, see what we find in this. Now, I want you to think about that. What is, they spoke of, I find your lack of faith disturbing, and you don't believe, and that is why you fail. But what are they really believing in? What is Darth Vader believing in that the other man doesn't? What is he believing in? The Force. And the Force as what? As a religion, as the way he orients his life. But does belief in the Force, and you're right, what does the belief in the Force, does it change his actions in a way that conforms to any greater reality? And the fact is that the Force, you can conform it either way, can't you? The whole dark side, light side thing. You can conform it either way. You can either conform it to your identity if you want to be evil, if you want to use it for your own benefit, you can conform it that way, or you can conform it to a light side, to a good side. In other words, that what you do with it, the allegiance, becomes relative depending on what you desire, even though both of them believe in the Force. You see that right there. Now, what about in Yoda's case, or in Luke? He says, the reason you couldn't is because you didn't believe. What is he talking about believing in? What does Luke still need to believe? The Force as it's activated in himself. And we see that throughout that, don't we? We see that it's a self-centered, self-referential faith is what it is in all of that. You determine what you do with it. And that's the kind of faith that our world, in many cases, wants to believe in. Is a faith that I can use to get what I want in that. Here's you have faith in science fiction without, often, a clear object. Here's an actual quotation from an individual who is a popular television preacher. Faith activates God. Through faith in God, you can live an overcoming life of victory. Your words have creative power. One of the primary ways we release our faith is through our words. That's not that much different from the Force. Use your faith to get what you want. I'm not going to say who said it. Maybe you can guess at this point. But I'm not going to say it at all who said that. But it's a faith that is referential to oneself in that. Last thing. Myth. Myth. Now, by myth, I don't necessarily mean something that's not true. By myth, I mean a story that ties all the other stories together, is what I mean. We may use the word meta-narrative, as I said earlier, is kind of the fancier version of this. But myth, this is from C.S. Lewis, uses it this way, J.R. Tolkien. And what C.S. Lewis, how he puts it, is he speaks of the story of Christ, he says, is the true myth. The story of Christ is the true myth. The way this, he doesn't mean it's not true. He says it's a myth working on us as the same way as the others, but with this tremendous difference that it really happened. It really happened. A myth or a meta-narrative is a unified story that is relevant to all people. But the interesting thing in science fiction is that you have myth that is detached from history because it is fiction. In that, it gives you a myth, it gives you a meta-narrative, but it is a meta-narrative or a myth that is detached from history. And here's what Tolkien realized, J.R. Tolkien, author of The Lord of the Rings. He says, myth. He says, not only the mountains and the moss, but also our very myths and fantasies, our legends and our storylines groan. They groan for glory. They're groaning. Our very storylines are looking for God. We have come from God, and inevitably the myths woven by us, though they contain error, will also reflect a splintered fragment of the true light, the eternal truth that is with God. Indeed, only by myth-making, only by inventing stories, can man ascribe to the state of perfection he knew before the fall. What he's trying to say in that is when we create stories like this, what we are trying to do is to get back to that story that was written on our souls before the fall. He says we're trying to get back. Now, science fiction can't get us back there because it is myth that is devoid of history, of real history. Science fiction cannot get us back there, but it can point people's imaginations. We can use it to point people's thoughts. We can use it to recognize that people have longings within them for the glory of God, longings that were written upon their souls before the world began, written upon the human soul before the world began. By that, I just didn't say that in the way I meant to. That was planned in the mind of God before time began. I just realized that I didn't say that quite the way I meant it to come out on that. That was written in the mind of God before time began. It was written in the mind of God. Myth that is detached from history is what science fiction gives us. But look at this. You can kind of see a reflection in a child's perspective of that. Mr. Gillespie, this business about Jesus sacrificing himself and coming back from the dead, it sounds like a takeoff of what Obi-Wan did in Star Wars. The Bible came first, Jason. Oh, so can God sue George Lucas for swiping his idea? Any idea where your Sunday school teacher was giving me that look? Right there, he sees right there that there's an echo even in the myth, the false myth, the science fiction. He sees that there's a reflection of the gospel in that. Now, we never want to reduce the gospel to that. But we say that the gospel is in history the reality that everybody else is trying to groan for and strive for. The gospel is the reality. And so here's what Paul has to say. The times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent because he has fixed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed, and of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. See, Paul didn't leave the Athenians to say, I'm going to introduce you to an unknown God. He sent to just kind of give them an idea about him. He took them straight to how God had revealed himself in history. That's where he took them. And when we talk to people, and we are witnessing to people, and they may have all sorts of crazy beliefs about God, but they have a longing for the truth. And we use that longing for truth in them to take them to the reality of Jesus Christ revealed in history. That's what we take them to the reality of. We never leave them just with their fiction. We use that as a tool to take them to the reality of Jesus Christ in history.